William's Double Life. It was a beautiful morning. The sun shone brightly on the pond and orchard of the Laburnums. William sat, as usual, happily fishing by the side of the pond. Then it happened without the slightest warning. A hand was laid on his shoulder from behind, and looking up with a start, his eyes met the eyes of the new tenant of the Laburnums, a woman with pince-nez and elaborately dressed hair. All about him were the signs of his guilt. His jar containing his morning's bag stood on one side of him, together with a little pile of apples gathered for refreshment. His pockets bulged with apples. His mouth was full of apple. He held a half-eaten apple in one hand and his rod in the other. "You naughty little ruffian!" exploded his captor. "How dare you trespass in my grounds and steal my fruit!" William swallowed half an apple whole, and by means of a gentle wriggle experimented with the grip on his shoulder. He was an expert in grips. The gentlest of wriggles could tell him whether a grip was the sort of grip he could escape from, or whether it wasn't. This one wasn't. So he abandoned himself to his fate and contented himself with glaring at his captor. He certainly wasn't a prepossessing sight. His face was streaked with mud, his collar was sodden and muddy, his legs were caked with mud up to the knees. "What's your name?" she said sharply. "William Brown," said William. He knew by experience that people always found out his name sooner or later. "Very well," said his captor. "I shall call to see your father about it. Go away out of my garden at once." With great dignity, William gathered up his jar of fishes, his net, stuffed the pile of apples into his pocket, raised his cap, and strolled out into the road. As he walked homewards, he couldn't help thinking he'd carried off the situation with something of an air. But she'd said she was going to tell his father, and he was pretty sure that a woman who could grip like that would be as good as her word. It meant that an end would be put to his fishing activities, and that as likely as not, his aquarium, a large pail, would be thrown away. He'd set his heart on getting 200 fishes. "You won't forget where you're going out to tea this afternoon, William, will you?" said his mother. "No," said William. He was going out to tea with the vicar. Occasionally the vicar, who disliked children but suffered from an overactive conscience, invited his more youthful parishioners to tea. It was after three when, clean and shining in his best suit, a gleaming Eton collar and a perfectly tied tie, he was allowed to set off down the road towards the vicarage. He walked slowly. Suddenly a figure stopped in front of him. It was the woman with the pince-nez and the hair. "Well," she said grimly, "I'm on my way to see your father." Then she faltered. You are William Brown, aren't you?" William saw at once what had happened. He was so clean and tidy as to be almost unrecognisable as the hero of the morning's escapade. "You are, aren't you?" she repeated. And then William had an inspiration, the sort of inspiration that comes to most of us only once in a lifetime, but that visited William more frequently. Fixing her with a virtuous and mournful gaze, he said, "No, I'm not William Brown. I'm his twin brother." Her severity vanished. "I see," she said. "I could see a strong resemblance, but yet I was sure there was some difference, though I couldn't have said what it was. He was very dirty and untidy, of course."
"Yes," agreed William sadly. "I expect he was."
"You're very alike in features, though, aren't you?" she went on. "It must be difficult for people to tell you apart."
Yes, agreed William. Lots of people can't tell us apart. His nose is just a bit longer. That's one way of telling us."
"Yes," she agreed. "I believe it is, now you mention it. I'm just on my way to call on your parents to complain of your brother. I found him this morning trespassing in my garden, stealing my apples and catching fishes in my pond. Do you know about it?"
William's mournful and virtuous expression deepened. Yes, he said. "He told me about it. I was just coming to see you about it."
"Why?"
"I was coming to ask you to let him off just for this once," said William, more mournfully, more virtuously than ever. "I was going to ask you not to go and see my father and mother about him this time."
It was quite evident that the lady was touched by his appeal. "You don't want your dear parents troubled by it, I suppose?"
she said. Oh, yes, that's it. I don't want my dear parents troubled by it.
I see. Well, your consideration for your parents does you credit. What is your name?
Algernon, said William, without a second's hesitation.
Algernon? A very pretty name, my dear.
She was evidently disposed to be friendly to Algernon. Then her gaze descended to an excrescence in William's pocket. It was an apple, the last remaining one of his morning's haul.
What's that? She said sharply.
William drew it out of his pocket and held it out to her.
I was bringing it back to you, he said. I got him to give it me. It was the only one he had left when he told me about it, and I pled with him.
You what?
Pled, said William. I pled with him to give it me and to bring it back to you, and to tell you he was sorry, and to ask you not to come troubling my dear parents about it.
The lady's suspicions were entirely lulled.
I'd like you to keep that apple, Algernon, she said, generously. But you must promise not to give it to your brother. Will you promise?
William duly promised, with quite a clean conscience. He certainly hadn't any intention of giving the apple to Robert.
I'm afraid that William must be rather a trouble to you, my dear boy, said the lady.
Yes, he is, said William sadly.
You told him how wrong he'd been this morning, I suppose?
Oh, yes, I told him that all right. I pled with him about it.
You must speak to him again about it. You must tell him how wrong trespassing is, and stealing. Tell him that a person who hasn't a clear idea of meum and tuum comes to no good in the end.
I'm always telling him, pleading with him and such like.
And can't you persuade him to be clean and tidy as you are? I've never seen such a dirty, untidy boy.
I'm always pleading with him about that, too. I'm always asking him why he can't be clean and tidy like what I am.
Dear boy, said the lady, laying a hand affectionately on his head. I feel that you and I are going to be great friends. My name is Miss Murgatroyd. Together we must try and improve poor William.
Yes, and you won't go troubling my dear parents, said William anxiously.
No, my boy, set your mind at rest. I hope they realise what a dear little protector they have in you. Well, I must get on now, as I have some other calls to pay. Goodbye, Algernon.
Goodbye, said William. On reaching home, he went straight to the shed where his aquarium was kept and counted its inhabitants. It still had only 120. There were 80 more to be got. The next morning, he set off as usual to the Laburnums. He spent a very happy morning. So cautious was he that he saw his enemy approaching as soon as she entered the orchard and hastily gathered up his paraphernalia and took to his heels. Her words reached him clearly as he fled across the orchard to his hole in the hedge.
I shall certainly tell your parents this time, William. I only let you off yesterday for your brother's sake. I shall not let you off again.
William went straight to his aquarium. He hadn't got as many today as he thought he had, only 20. He still had 60 to get. He must get those tomorrow. He'd decided to have 200 fishes in his aquarium, and it was going to take more than a woman with spectacles and a lot of hair to stop him. After lunch, his mother was lying down when he crept downstairs in that state of radiant cleanliness and neatness that served as his disguise. He wore his best suit. His knees were pink from scrubbing. He walked mincingly up to the front door of the Laburnums and rang the bell. He fixed the housemaid with a stern and defiant stare.
"Can I speak to Miss Murgatroyd, please?" he said.
"What's your name?"
"Algernon Brown," said William.
"Algernon, did you say?"
"No," said William irritably. "Algernon."
He was shown into a drawing-room where Miss Murgatroyd received him affably.
"It's Algernon, isn't it?" she said.
"Yes," said William, and added with quite convincing anxiety, "He didn't come this morning, did he?"
Miss Murgatroyd sighed.
"I'm afraid he did, Algernon."
"I pled with him not to," said William sorrowfully. "I couldn't stay with him to stop him coming, because an uncle took me up to London. But before I went up, I pled with him not to come. I told him all you said about trespassing and...
"Meum and tuum," supplied Miss Murgatroyd.
"Yes," said William vaguely.
"Did he tell you that I was going to tell his parents?"
William cleared his throat and, with a superhuman effort, deepened his expression of virtue till it bordered on the imbecile.
"Yes," he said.
That's why I came. I came to ask you not to tell them just this once. My mother's got a bit of a headache, and so I thought it might worry her hearing about William taking your apples and fishes. But if you'll let him off just this once more, I'll try and stop him coming tomorrow. I'll plead with him.
But don't you think, said Miss Murgatroyd earnestly, that it would do William good to be punished?
No, said William, I really don't think so. I think it does him far more good to be pled with.
Well, I can tell you, said Miss Murgatroyd with great severity, if I'd got him here now, I'd box his ears most soundly. Will you have a piece of cake, Algernon, dear?
He signified that he would, and she brought out a rich currant cake and cut him a generous slice. He ate it. She watched him fondly.
So you won't tell him about William, he said, when he'd finished.
Miss Murgatroyd considered.
Well, just because your consideration for your parents touches me, Algernon, I won't this once. But you may tell William from me that the very next time I find him trespassing and stealing on my property, I'll come straight and tell his father. Will you tell him that from me?
Yes, said William anxiously. I'll tell him that from you.
He rose to take his leave.
And what place in London did your uncle take you to, Algernon? Said Miss Murgatroyd.
The Tower, said William at random.
And did you like the beef-eaters?
It was the Tower I said we went to, said William, not the zoo.
Then he went home.
The next morning he tried to elude his enemy by arriving earlier than usual. He thought he'd been successful till he was setting off homewards. Then he saw his enemy watching him grimly from an upper window, and he knew that all was over. Algernon would be of no avail now. But he'd got his 200 fishes.
"What are you going to do this afternoon, dear?" said his mother at lunch.
"I'm going to tea to Ginger's. He's just home from his holiday."
"Well, you mustn't go till I've seen your tidy."
It was some time before she passed William's appearance as fit for his visit to Ginger's home. He set off, but at the bend in the road collided with Miss Murgatroyd. He assumed a blend of his virtuous and defiant expressions and awaited events.
"William came again this morning, Algernon," she said, "and I'm on my way now to speak to your parents about him. You must come with me, Algernon, and I will tell them how you've tried to spare their feelings."
Mrs. Brown was in the drawing-room.
"I've come," began Miss Murgatroyd, "to complain of your son, William."
William assumed his blankest expression and avoided his mother's eyes.
"He has persistently and deliberately trespassed in my grounds, robbed my orchard and fished in my pond. This dear child of yours," she went on, laying her hand affectionately on William's head, "has done all in his power to protect him and to spare your feelings."
William, looking blanker still, studiously avoided his mother's astounded gaze.
"He begged me not to complain of him to you. He has tried to induce William to stop trespassing in my grounds. He has pleaded with him."
Pleaded, not pled, Algernon.
"You are fortunate indeed in having a dear little son like Algernon."
Mrs. Brown's amazement was turning to apprehension.
Just 1 minute, she said faintly.
Then, to her relief, she saw her husband's figure pass the window.
"There's my husband. I'll go..."
She went hastily from the room to warn her husband that the visitor suffered from delusions and must presumably be humoured. William, left alone with the visitor, looked desperately about him.
I think I see William in the garden, he said. I'll go and...
He plunged through the window and disappeared. His first thought was to carry the aquarium with its 200 inhabitants out of the reach of paternal vengeance. Ginger had come to meet him, so together they carried the precious pail to the old barn. Ginger suddenly remembered something.
"I say, your father and mother and another woman were all out in the road looking for you."
"Did they look mad?"
"Well, yes, they did, rather."
"Well, it doesn't matter much," said William resignedly. "I've got the 200 fishes away all right, anyway. They can't throw them away now, and I'll give them time to get over it a bit before I go home."
"How did you get 'em all, William?" said Ginger, as they hung spellbound over the pail.
William settled down comfortably by his beloved aquarium and chuckled.
"I'll tell you all about it," he said. "You see, it's all about Mayum and Tuum
and a boy called Algernon.